Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. Governor Kathy Hochul signed a measure this week that will allow all pharmacies in New York to dispense birth control medications to anyone who wants them. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Hochul says it's another step to protect women's reproductive rights after the U.S. Supreme Court's Dobbs decision in 2022 that struck down the landmark abortion rights decision Roe v. Wade. Hochul says Dobbs emboldened some on the political right to try to limit medication abortions and in vitro fertilization. While birth control medicines remain legal in the U.S., some states are placing restrictions on obtaining the pills or contraceptive devices. The governor says in New York, there will be full access.
Starting today, pharmacies are now allowed to dispense three different types of contraception medication, and any woman can walk into a participating pharmacy and choose the birth control method that best suits her needs. And this will dramatically increase access to this for women, particularly at a time when women are feeling discouraged and not listened to and powerless.
State Health Commissioner Jim McDonald says three methods of contraception will be available. The oral hormonal pill, conventionally known as the birth control pill, a hormonal vaginal ring, and a hormonal contraceptive patch. McDonald says the order signed by the governor essentially gives the health commissioner the power to issue one prescription that can be accessed by anyone.
Basically, what we've done today by me signing this order is if you come to New York and you want to have contraception, I've issued a prescription for you. For this role, I've become your doctor as the state's physician.
He says the pharmacists will do a risk assessment to help the person decide which method is best for them. All the prescriptions will be covered by insurance. People from other states can get the birth control medicines and devices, too, as long as they are physically in a pharmacy in New York, McDonald says.
The way it works if you're out of state is you walk into a New York State pharmacy, show them your insurance card, and just say to the pharmacist, hey, I'm here to see what I can do as far as getting contraception. You're welcome like everyone else.
He says everyone who asks can get a year's worth of the medication. The law was supposed to go into effect in January, but Hochul says the state education department needed more time to finalize the regulations, and they completed those only a few days ago. The major chain pharmacies and many independent drugstores are expected to participate. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt for the New York Public News Network.
Voters in villages across New York went to the polls this week. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes a look.
Most villages had uncontested races for mayor and for trustee seats. In several villages, three or more candidates looked to win two available trustee seats. Dean Brown, running unopposed for mayor in the Saratoga County village of Corinth, was upstaged by a write-in candidate. Maureen Kelly is a trustee on the village board.
The results of the mayor's race were Harry Miller received 266 votes. Mr. Dean Brown received 113. For the four-year trustee race, Deb Stowery received 298 votes. Jim Clark received 245. For the two-year trustee position, Michael Bedell received 290 votes. And in the referendum on the purchase of 97 Main Street for a new village hall, received 62 yeses and 327 noes.
Kelly says voter turnout factored in the upset victory.
Frankly, in the smaller elections, we don't often have more than 100 folks come out to vote, believe it or not. And because it seems like a strange time of year, village elections are always held in March, and people have the mindset of November for elections. I just think they don't remember to come out and vote.
Turnout was modest in Cooperstown. Town clerk Jenna Utter shares results from the village election.
Mayor-elect Ellen Tillipaw received 129 Democratic votes. and Too Many Voices, One Village. Trustee Cynthia Falk received 136 Democratic votes, along with Too Many Voices, One Village. Trustee Hannah Bergen received 139 Democratic votes and Too Many Voices, One Village. There were 16 write-ins total, 16 were for mayor, and then trustee had 5 write-ins.
Tulipaw, first elected in 2018, enters her third term. Otter says turnout was modest.
We made about 10%. It was kind of a, you know, because there wasn't a contest, but 10% of voters did come out, which was a, you know, a good thing. There was 135 total people in person, and the rest were by absentee.
Doreen Weir ran unopposed for mayor of Kinderhook on the Lindenwald party line after Mayor Michael Abrams decided not to seek another term. Weir will soon welcome a new amenity.
This year, our kayak launch / exit point is going to be completed. We have our expectations are for the end of May of this year, and we are on a co-grant from New York State, and this other village on that grant with us is Valencia. Expecting to have theirs completed by the end of September of this year.
Village Planning Board member T. Kevin Monahan won a seat on the Board of Trustees, and incumbent trustee Susan Patterson was reelected to a second term. Both are members of the new Kinderhook Party. Michael Silk ran unopposed for mayor of Castleton-on-Hudson with the blessing of former mayor Joe Keegan, who opted not to run for another term. Silk expects to make progress on several initiatives.
Because we're an older village, we have lots of things to deal with. And so now's a good time to build in some infrastructure and to have a master infrastructure plan to help move things forward. Also, we're planning on to revitalize our Main Street, working with the building owners and the residents.
Greene County Board of Elections unofficial results show Democrats won races for Village Board of Trustees seats in Catskill, Coxsackie, and Athens. In the Village of Catskill, 4 candidates were in the running for 2 available seats. Democrats Jeffrey Workman Jr. and Daniel Ward defeated incumbent Republicans Jeffrey Holliday and Peter Grasse.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with State Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay, Republican, who just received the Circle of Friends Award from the State Farm Bureau, which prompted a discussion about the plight of small farms.
Well, thank you very much. I've been honored to get the Circle of Friends Award for every year I've been in the Assembly. You know, I come from a rural district, a lot of agriculture in the area that I represent, and you're exactly right. Small family farms are struggling, and we've done nothing, unfortunately, in Albany to help these farms. Even the agriculture that's still surviving now has gone bigger and bigger, and it's kind of, you know, crowded out the small farms, and it's tough. It's a struggle, and you know, we passed the Farm Labor Act a few years ago, and that put additional expense on it. We have a lot of regulations of how you can operate your farm that puts a lot of pressure on them, and I think a lot of them just said, enough's enough. We don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, farming at one time was the largest business in New York State. I don't know if it still is. But even if it wasn't just for the economic impact of the farms, I think the culture and the history, you know, it's kind of in some of our blood. I think it's tragic to lose that for that reason, too.
So what can we do, Minority Leader Will Barclay? What can we do for these small farms? Is there any legislation out there? What plans are there to help them?
Sure. Well, just take dairy farms. One very easy thing we could do is put whole milk back into schools. It got outlawed because they thought the fat contents of milk was unhealthy for kids. That's turned out not to be accurate at all. There's an easy one. Let's sell whole milk back in schools. But ultimately, it's a lot of stuff we could do on the state that we could do for business generally. We overregulate, we overtax all businesses in New York State. And for them, where the margins are so thin, it's very difficult for them to survive.
It seems like it. I don't know if this is true or not. You can maybe fill me in if you know. But that this terrible rollout that we're hearing about when it came to the cannabis industry also was a detriment to some of the farmers who had grown crops and then were, you know, forced to leave them in warehouses because the industry was tied up in lawsuits and they didn't have markets for their product. They finally allowed them at farmers markets. But, you know, farmers who can't maybe get as much for their traditional crops might have this as an option. It seems like it might not have been thought through enough in regard to the farmers.
You think that might be the most accurate statement, not thought through enough. With this whole cannabis rollout, putting aside the terrible tragedy, yeah, these people invested their life savings to try to take advantage of this new market, supposedly, and the state regulators have just dropped the ball left and right. Now we have, unfortunately, as you know, a huge black market that's grown up around this, and they don't seem to want to crack down on these illegal stores, too. But it seems like everything regarding this program has been one disaster after another, and I was pleased with the governor. Looks like she's going to get an inspector general or someone in there to investigate what's going on. Hopefully that will lead to some leadership changes and get this point in the right direction. She should have done this a long time ago, but at least she's now recognizing, and I support in those efforts to try to get this program cleaned up.
Yeah, I don't know how you can have a functioning legal market when it's still cheaper to buy it on the black market.
And I think that was even policy. I think someone from the cannabis management agency even said that they want to do that because they're trying to encourage more cannabis use in New York State. So that's why they didn't want to crack down on the illegal stores. It seems sort of crazy to me, but anyways, the long and short of it, David, it definitely needs someone to go in there and clean this up, and ultimately we'll need new leadership, I'm sure.
We're speaking with Will Barkley, the New York State Assembly Minority Leader, a Republican. Your conference and generally in Republicans have been on the issue of public safety. The subways in New York now have National Guard troops in them. The governor, reacting to some high-profile incidents in the subway, has done that. There's been some criticism. Why didn't you just hire more cops? But at the same time, she certainly responded to the issue. And there's talk about, you know, even if it's just for psychological reasons to keep people feeling safe, it was something that needed to be done. So what do you make on the Republican side of the governor's move there?
Well, again, we're all for more safety in law enforcement, particularly where it's, you know, crime's been rampant on the subway. So we're not opposed to that. I'm not sure that's the solution. I think you're right. More, I would like, you know, if we didn't have this anti-police narrative, we might not be losing so many New York PD members and people join the force more readily than they are now. You know, I would prefer, obviously, to have police in the subways versus the National Guard. But if that's one thing that's going to quell the surge of violent crimes that's happening there, I fully support that.
That's New York State Republican Assembly Minority Leader Will Barkley. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Congressman Pat Ryan joined cleanup crews in Cornwall last weekend to call on telecom companies like Verizon and AT&T to disclose and clean up toxic lead-sheathed cables across the country. The Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports.
So the cable starts right there, just past where John is. You can see it in the embankment right there.
Ryan met with members of the Cornwall cleanup crew along a busy stretch of Quaker Avenue. Angelo Shimberry, a volunteer and local arborist, says the crew has covered this particular area multiple times. It's a frequent site of illegal dumping and litter, but their latest find is likely decades old, a fallen telephone wire wrapped in white lead coating.
And the white is oxidation, and that's how it leaches into the soil. So
if it's that color, that means it's much more likely to lead into all what's, you know, right
lead
here.
Lead does not oxidize in the air very quickly, which is the reason why they used it. You put it in contact with soil or water and it leaches very quickly.
Ryan says the telecom industry largely phased out lead-sheathed cables in the 1950s, but many of them remain hanging, abandoned. As they come down or the lead sheathing simply falls off, Ryan worries they can contaminate communities. The CDC warns lead poisoning can be especially harmful to children, putting them at risk of slower development, brain damage, and learning and behavioral issues. Last summer, a Wall Street Journal report identifying old lead cables by a playground in Wappingers Falls prompted officials to temporarily shut down the village's Temple Park. Park. A state soil analysis later found no evidence of elevated or widespread contamination in the area. Regardless, Ryan says he's working on legislation with Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey, a fellow Democrat, to ensure that corporations like Verizon and AT&T, which ultimately bought the companies that installed the lines, are responsible for cleaning them up.
No community, no group of citizens in this country should be out on a beautiful Saturday having to clean up the mess of a multi-billion dollar corporation, but that's exactly what's happening.
Ryan estimates there are thousands of miles of lead-sheathed cables in the U.S., but officials still don't know exactly where. In response to the Journal report last year, Governor Kathy Hochul directed state agencies like the Public Service Commission to investigate the impacts of old lead cables in the state. More than 200 companies were asked to provide a list of cable locations, but many of them, including AT&T and Verizon, have asked the PSC to keep their inventories confidential. Cornwall Town Supervisor John Wojciechowski says when he looked through the documents on the PSC website, all he found were black, heavily redacted pages. He says it's frustrating because it's easy to spot lead cables hanging all over the town.
Why are they just basically junking up, you know, our community? I mean, they really should come and they should remove them. If you buy a company, you assume the assets and liabilities of that, you know, purchase. And so, I mean, it's really not too much to ask, except they're fighting the governor in court right now because, you know, they're citing all of these things, you know, trade secrets, national security, etc. You know, pretty much all bullshit, because they don't want to have to assume the cost for the cleanup.
A spokesperson for U.S. Telecom, the trade organization representing the telecom industry, says it prioritizes the health and safety of communities, adding in part, quote, "We will continue to follow the science, which has not identified that lead-sheathed telecom cables are a leading cause of lead exposure or the cause of a public health issue." And recent federal, state, and industry testing has reinforced this point. Our industry remains committed to engaging constructively with stakeholders, including policymakers, on this important matter, end quote. Shimberry says the Cornwall cleanup crew ultimately decided not to remove the cable Saturday, as they're still weighing the safest methods of disposal. Vice President Tanya Chacho says the organization, which lists more than 400 total volunteers on Facebook, hopes to expand into a larger nonprofit serving all of the Hudson Valley. She says the job is never really done.
It can be discouraging sometimes and overwhelming to see what we find, but these are the people that I want to be out with. You know, these are the people that I want to be around because these are the ones that care and that are making a difference.
The Cornwall cleanup crew meets every Sunday morning at the CVS parking lot on Quaker Avenue. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
New York State public school districts are complying with a state mandate to remove indigenous nicknames and imagery by the end of the 2024-25 school year. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard.
The Mechanicville City School District in Saratoga County has long been home to the Red Raiders, but in compliance with the Education Department policy, the district has launched an online survey to collect public opinion on changing its nickname and mascot. While acknowledging resistance to the change within the district, Mechanicville Superintendent Kevin Kolakowski wants the school community to lend their voices to the process.
It is the utmost importance for us on our end to ensure that as we're moving forward, that we do so in a unified way. And I want to be clear that, you know, as we're moving forward in this whole process, whether we're Raiders, Red Raiders, or any other name, we are Mechanicville.
The survey will remain available on the district's website through the end of the week. Districts that do not comply with the policy are at risk of losing state funding. The Education Department recommends districts, quote, employ the most economical approach to addressing these requirements in both time and capital, end quote. Kolakowski notes the potential high costs for adopting a new moniker and mascot.
There are some qualifiers that for some of your big ticket items, like your turf fields, which are a substantial charge, or the scrubbing of a gym floor, you can put in hardship waivers for, you know, a short time in order to at least spread out the cost of what this is going to be. But in the same breath, it's a significant amount of money that should be used for kids in program, not for the mandated rebranding of a logo or mascot.
Mechanicville is starting the process of changing its nickname after the South Colony Central School District Board of Education last month officially adopted its new moniker, the Wolfpack, retiring its Raiders name. Colonies Native American imagery was phased out by the district about a decade ago. Superintendent David Perry said Colony initially petitioned to keep its Raiders nickname, but was denied.
So at that time, we developed a strategic plan for engaging our students, our community members, and set out just about a year ago this time, about March of 2023, looking at what we needed to do.
The district asked for public input, and Perry estimates about 200 offerings came from the school community. The choices were narrowed down to a top four this fall before the Wolfpack name was chosen, a nod to the busy Wolf Road. Because Colony had already retired its indigenous imagery, opting to use its capital C on sports uniforms, Perry says the cost has been spread out over time. Pricier initiatives, such as the refurbishing of a basketball court, are already being incorporated into a larger capital project. But that's not to say there isn't a cost associated with adopting the new nickname.
We certainly have costs for signage. We have costs for, rugs and carpets that as people enter facilities. I don't have a final cost. If I were to guesstimate that cost, I would say it's at least $75,000 and probably closer to over $100,000 when all said and done on the low end.
In Cambridge, where the public school district unsuccessfully sued to keep its Indians moniker after years of debate, the Cambridge Central School District Board of Education this month tabled a motion to approve a new school mascot. In a statement, the district said it was taking the advice of its superintendent and legal counsel, saying the delay comes, quote, in order to provide more time for district administration to review additional information that has been brought to its attention and to discuss with our school attorney, end quote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The outgoing commissioner of the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation was at a park on the shore of Lake Champlain to discuss the release of a final watershed plan and to announce investments that will help improve the water quality of the lake. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
New York Commissioner of Environmental Conservation Basil Sagos traveled to the North Country Monday to make two announcements related to the water quality of Lake Champlain. Standing near the shore, Sagos called Lake Champlain one of the most pristine water bodies in North America. He said its water quality must be protected.
Every water body has different stressors, but for the most part, it's failing infrastructure that impacts our water quality. And that leads to so many things. In the case of Lake Champlain, it's excessive phosphorus, obviously creating harmful algal blooms. Algal blooms can cause very dangerous conditions for pets, for drinking water, for contact. Water clarity also. You notice sometimes the Lake Champlain and other waterways that are impacted by phosphorus can actually lose their clarity, and that's really important for the ecology of the water and for the fisheries. And then is excessive weeds growth. You know, when we recognize there's a problem and a resource this magnificent, this important, we have to tackle it with all the tools we have at our disposal.
To that end, Commissioner Sagos announced that the DEC has released the final Lake Champlain Watershed Implementation Plan.
This is a very detailed document, actually gives an updated survey of all the land uses on this body of water, all the historic pressures on this body of water, the projects that we put in place. Certainly all of the investments we've made has cataloged that, but it's designed to be forward-looking. That's why we get excited about planning documents, because they can take note of what we've done in the past, but then help guide our investments moving forward, and help create new forums for public education and for outreach, and to help us coordinate with our partners in Vermont and Quebec. This is the path forward.
Lake Champlain Basin Program New York Lake Champlain Coordinator Aaron Venny Volrath said the organization is excited to work with its partners and the DEC to improve water quality throughout the watershed.
Science-based plans like this new watershed implementation plan are critical for ensuring that the management decisions of the Lake Champlain watershed are informed by the best information available to address the increasing number of challenges to our waterways.
Sago says the Watershed Implementation Plan is the prelude for financial investment in the lake and announced new clean water funding to localities.
The town of Peru is getting $1 million for its upgrades to the wastewater plant. So congratulations, Deputy Supervisor. So this upgrade is going to go right into reducing phosphorus. I want to congratulate also the Essex County Soil and Water Conservation District getting $150,000 for stormwater planning. And we are not done. We also have $435 million available right now for municipalities all across the state.
The total cost for upgrades at Peru's wastewater plant have been estimated to be a minimum of $11 million. Water Sewer Department Superintendent Courtney Tatro says the new money from the state will be for a targeted use.
That $1 million was specific to solids handling equipment in our treatment facility, which right now is inadequate. We have a hard time finding parts, getting maintenance done on it. A lot of times we recycle the waste product because of the inefficiency of the press, which recycles a lot of the bound up phosphorus that's in that solids.
The State Environmental Facilities Corporation has $325 million available statewide for water infrastructure grant funding and is taking applications until June 14th. Sagos is stepping down after nearly a decade this spring. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York State Public News Network. You can listen to the Legislative Gazette anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2412. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.